product for everyone, right?
There is.
We're not saying there's right and wrong.
No.
It's finding the right for
correct.
You.
And it's your own, oh, I hate to use a bloody word, journey.
Oh.
It's your own decision. There you go. Look, this whole process about using AI to determine what you want to buy and listen to, it's about as idiotic as letting AI determine what gelato flavour you like.
Welcome back to Not an Audiophile, the podcast, episode 44 of season 2. The last episode for season 2. We're on to season 3 because it's a new year. 13th of January next year will be the next episode. Yes, we are taking a break, a well-deserved one. It's been a huge year. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This episode, we are having a bit of a general roundup of stuff with David Carrazza, our regular auxiliary host, if you like, and who holds a different opinion on many things to me, but equally has spent many years in the audio industry in many areas. So today we're talking about AI and other stuff, and I think you'll find it quite interesting. A good roundup for the year. But speaking of the year and next year, we have many plans for next year. We're polishing the production, if you like, and we have many interesting guests lined up, some of which were organized this year but didn't make it because we're all busy. Others, well, you know, we've been ringing people up, and we've got some very interesting guests lined up. You will want to listen. Without any further ado, the show for today, and I'd like to say just thank you one more time. It's really, our audience has grown dramatically over the year, particularly outside of Australia. The US in particular has shot ahead, so thank you over there for listening to us. I'm glad you can put up with the accent, and thank you to the rest of the world as well, and we really look forward to entertaining you and informing you in 2026. For the discerning audio enthusiast, performance and precision matter. That's why March Audio employs Purify technology to engineer award-winning loudspeakers and amplifiers. They deliver sound that truly transcends expectations, all available at an entirely modest cost. Go now to marchaudio.com and check out more of Alan March's engineering feats, including a sale price on the 501 amplifier. March Audio, for the discerning audio enthusiast. Just before we get on to today's episode, a quick note. And no, I'm not going to ask you to like and subscribe, although happy for you to do that. I was going to give you an update on the Quad 3 integrated review. Now, when I reviewed that amplifier, I was very impressed. It sounded great. I, of course, love the look of it. It's a delightful design, and it makes a change from rectangular boxes with sharp corners and black ones and silver ones at that. There was a few things about the ergonomics that I wasn't in love with, but you could get past those and you would get used to it. But still, they probably could have done a little better, but maybe not within the confines of the aesthetic that they were angling for. But there was a technical glitch, and we reported on that as it appeared to us, which is that it wouldn't actually work properly with my audio system at home to watch TV, either from a Toslink out or HDMI ARC. So we reported on that as it happened, which was that it was choppy. I played a little recording of what I recorded, and it was kind of frustrating, and I tried all sorts of solutions, checked the settings, checked leads, tried different things, but the reality was that it didn't work where many other products had worked seamlessly without thought. They just worked. And so we reported on that. Now, I felt at the time that was the right thing to do, and I still think it's the right thing to do. The IAG people were mildly annoyed that I perhaps didn't contact them and discuss it with them first. And I kind of understand that because it's frustrating for them. But there's a couple of things I'd like to say about that. The bottom line is, at Not an Audiophile, we will always say it as it is. We requested a product to review. They were only too happy to supply it, and we told you what happened. It's unfortunate that there was a little glitch in what was an otherwise an excellent product. But like I've said, almost certainly it's a there's a problem with that particular sample. Hopefully they'll send us another where it can report to you that it now works the same as every other piece of equipment that I've put on that particular television, and it will work cleanly without choppiness. Now, I should say that I did try the Quad 3 integrated on other digital devices, and it worked flawlessly. So don't panic. Don't let it stop you from buying it unless you've got about a 3 to 5 year old Samsung TV. I think it's a 42 inch. I don't know the model. They're all much the same, aren't they? I don't know. Maybe they're not. The TV works perfectly. Everything else connected to it works perfectly, except that one time with that particular product. And we will, you know, the point of this mention is that A, we'll catch up with you in the new year with what really, you know, what happens in the end. But we'll also continue to report reviews as they unfold. And I say that because we have reviews booked for the new year. And we kick off with a very nice amplifier that we're about to receive and start listening to, a new model from the UK. And that will be a very interesting story. And like the Quad, we'll pull it apart, have a look at what's inside, see what it's really made of, see what you get for your money, have a listen to what you get for your money, and we'll report back to you with what actually happened. Now today's podcast. And here we are, back in the room with David Carrazza and myself, Andrew Hutchison. Hey, David, how you been?
I've been rather well. Thanks,
good,
Andrew.
Yeah. Good. You look well.
Cheers.
Your shirt's up to your usual standards of brightness.
Oh, shucks. Thanks.
As are your shoes.
It's a pity the listeners only have black and white.
Yes, that's right. Oh, well. One day. Hey, David, what do we got today? There's a few interesting subjects we're going to discuss in some detail.
Yeah.
In a very focused and organised way.
I think so. The first two off the rank would be just commenting on AI. And there's been a number of commentators on the interwebs about AI and how it affects our industry. But I want to get a little bit more granular about how it affects our customers and the way in which people do business.
Okay.
I think that's going to be a topic we'd like to cover. And also later on, I've got some notes about the good old phantom of gear acquisition syndrome.
Ooh.
And it's been my observation that different sub-communities in our hobby do it differently, and I'd like to comment on that and see what the listeners think too.
Yes, we should mention that if you'd like to comment, the best way to do it on Not an Audiophile's material is to go to our YouTube channel and look up the particular episode there. They're named episode whatever. 44 in this case, and comment away. We really want to know. Will we go AI first?
Yeah, why not? You can start off. You've got some thoughts. You've had some interesting observations of late.
Well, I'm going to borrow someone else's interesting observation or video, which really just states what I've been saying for a very long time, which I guess is if you go back far enough, I mean, it bugs every tradesman, anyone with specialised knowledge is annoyed by the how-to YouTube videos historically, you know, how to do this. I mean, and chefs must get driven insane by it, right?
Correct.
It doesn't matter who you are or what you do. If you work in the trade at a high level, whatever that trade is, you will find the how-to YouTube videos kind of both annoying and hilarious at the same time because they're full of, you know, half-truths and sort of, confusing to us, confusing information in the sense that you've caught it, they've sort of half got it right, but then they go about it the wrong way or
absolutely,
vice versa.
Yeah.
So I've stated that very poorly, but I think most of the people listening to this show have an expertise in something. And of course, if you look at the how-to videos, it's a bit depressing. So, and depressing, I should explain from the point of view that it's kind of a dumbing down of the human race. So the old way of passing on knowledge was you'd go and do an apprenticeship, traineeship, internship, what have you, and you once a relationship had been formed, you would be graced with the trade secrets over
correct.
A period of time, and you would go, oh, that's a better way of doing that, or that achieves a better outcome or a more reliable result, or, oh, so that's how you make scrambled eggs. So whatever. So there's all these little secrets. Now, these are trade secrets that, in my belief, simply are not on the internet. And they're not on there because they make money for the person who's performing that chore or work, which may be a chore, but the point is, there's two things at play. Those people are busy performing that skilled task, and secondly, they've got no motivation to put it out there.
Why would there be? It's something that was
learned.
They've
probably spent 20 years learning how to get this thing right.
Correct.
Why am I going to give it away for free or for 1 cent per video view or whatever it is YouTube gets? Don't know, but it's very little. Maybe it's 0.01 of a cent. I don't know. But AI has shone a light on this concern of mine. It's not a concern, it's more of an observation that the real intellect of society is not on the internet. So now AI is this amazing thing that really just, in a very impressive way, condenses the information on the internet into one place, which has so many effects on society over the coming years. We could talk about that, but I think people realise, and if you don't realise, that AI is going to change the world more, I feel, than the internet even did, then you better look into it, because it is either diabolical or amazing, depending on your situation. But it's got a flaw. So Rick Beato is a musical genius, but in the music industry, the music making industry, has an extraordinary knowledge and skill, knows a lot of people, makes a great video, has a great following. Half the audience listening to me now will know of him. The other half, you know, if you like, is a bit stuck on music from the 80s and 90s, but, you know, aren't we all? So he, you know, have a look at a Rick Beato video. But about 20 videos ago, he did a thing called How I Broke AI. We'll put a link to the video in the text for this show. It's great. He illuminates the flaws of AI. AI has many great things, and we'll discuss that in a second. But he sets out to break it, which he does, but then he questions AI about where AI gets its own knowledge, in this case on audio engineering. And, of course, the secrets of audio engineering are held very closely by those who know about such things, have learnt the hard way, have worked out how to get the sound the way they want or that they were looking for, and they ain't giving it away on the internet. And that's the point of this, is that... So this is the fundamental problem with AI. If you are relying on AI to become a genius, this is not going to work. Now, people will argue that in time, geniuses will publish their knowledge on the internet and therefore AI will become a genius. But will they? And that's the question. I'm just going to leave you with that. I don't have an answer. It's just that AI is great up to a point. AI is, for instance, good for finding airfares that join odd cities together in an affordable way if you want to fly at particular times. It's great. Of course it's good, because that is information that is on the internet. Airlines want their available fares published on the internet.
And look, this is exactly...
But geniuses don't.
This is... You've hit the nail on the head. The vast majority of people out there look at AI, and more accurately, large language models, whether it's Grok or a ChatGTP or whatever, it doesn't really matter. They use it as a utility. They use it as an advanced version of a web browser. And that's fine. Mm. It actually performs rather well like that. However...
Oh, right up to the point where it takes information from various web sources and then fills in the gaps itself where it thinks it's right and therefore creates...
Oh, yeah. It's a known thing untruth. That the large language models do hallucinate.
Mm.
And that's, you know, this has been... an interesting dialogue or observation in the LLM community over the last 6 months, how things are going off the rails a bit with some of the large language models, and then, you know, teams quickly going in and correcting them.
Yes.
If you're at all interested, listeners, you can sort this out. Just type large language model hallucination or AI hallucination. There's tons of articles on the web, wildly amusing and equally disturbing reading.
Mm. I mean... But before I let you go off onto your AI concern, the more I think about it, and two things. One, it's become so much better in 6 months or a year, like dramatically. And I mean, you know, I realise everyone knows this, so I assume everyone knows this, but I'm getting to something, which is if the thing that you do in your life does not involve touch, personality, it's if you're, unfortunately for those that make a living out of moving stuff around on a screen, touching a keyboard, you know, maybe do a barista course. I don't know, because I mean that sounds terrible, but it's getting really good really fast. I don't think it's a great DIY as learning tool for electronics, as an example, because if you want to get into the real secrets of, say, loudspeaker design, I'm sorry, they're just not on the internet. Even though DIY audio think they've got all the secrets, they bloody haven't. Be assured, when you speak to the people who are really designing incredible loudspeakers, they know stuff they won't tell anyone. They're not telling me. They're not telling anyone. Because I've probed these people. I've not like an alien would, you know, but I've probed them like, so why, you know, why do you do that? What's that there? What's that there for? You reckon? And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I can't talk about that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, and a lot of their ideas, their great things are disguised with supposed, yeah, with marketing flourishes of, oh, it's this and it's that, it's an acronym and this is, you know, but really that's to distract you and make it sound more impressive. The real magic is something else. It just is. I'm sorry. Mm. That's the same, I'm sure, in every industry. You know, it's like Formula One. Oh, this car's faster because of XYZ. That's a distraction. There's another reason that they don't want you to know, which probably breaks a rule. Exactly. That, you know, that. So anyhow, moving right along. Are you familiar with Edgar Kramer? Well, you should be. He's Australia's most renowned hi-fi reviewer. And his website, soundstageaustralia.com, is, well, quite amazing. Incredibly detailed, well-written reviews on all sorts of interesting hi-fi components, interviews with industry luminaries, factory tours, and, of course, news. Don't forget, Soundstage Australia is part of Soundstage Global Network. So when you're finished with this podcast, go to soundstageaustralia.com and check it out.
Well, if I can come down from those lofty conceptual heights, and they're good examples, actually, I'd like to bring this conversation back to where a lot of our listeners would have some resonance with, and that's being in the industry and actually manufacturing / selling stuff to people for their musical enjoyment. And I'd like to take a few minutes and relate some instances I've experienced the last few months, which...
Yes, please.
Initially... shocked me and amused me, but now they give me great pause and I think this is not so good. So let me just just getting back to your thing, Andrew, about the thing about LLMs is they just scrape the internet and they aggregate as much material and kind of coalesce it as they can. Now, whether that's correct information or incorrect information, that's getting better. It's, you know, a lot of it's getting more filtered, etc. But as you correctly say, many people hide trade secrets. For very good reason. But if we go to the other end of the spectrum and look at, say, a music lover who comes into a store and wants to buy some hi-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Up until very recently, the modus operandi was a salesperson would greet them. We'd briefly have a chat with them about their aspirational needs, what kind of room they have, all the usual qualifying questions so we know where to steer them. Of late... and just bear with me, listeners, there's a certain subset of people who come in, and the first example I'll give you is probably not a surprise to many people who are involved in either manufacturing, distribution, and retail, is that a person will come in, they'll brandish this A4 spreadsheet with colour-coded cells and...
You know, what?
Oh, it's hilarious. It still happens where, you know, people actually aggregate all the brands, the models, and they do... what they consider to be a cross-component comparison of this is 80 watts, this one's 100 watts, you know, 100 watts is better than 80 watts. Oh, yeah, I still get that. It's unbelievable. However...
I've had that, like, once in my life. I just turfed the guy back out of the store.
Well, it's embarrassing
because... I did it, you know, politely and I didn't use physical violence.
Just verbal violence.
I used my mental powers
Indeed. To
direct
him
towards the door. Like, it's... It's overthinking it, isn't it?
It's overthinking it. And the problem is certain people, and it's not just in the audio world. I mean, it's in it's in cars, food, fashion, metallurgy, whatever. People tend to overthink things, where they should be just like relaxing and going, okay, what's really important here?
Mm.
So anyway, there was one instance of a certain person who did this, and I thought, oh, here we go. And then after about a 10-minute conversation about the usefulness or the non-usefulness of certain things within the spreadsheet,
yes,
he then, with a flourish,
yes,
pulls out, and I'm not kidding, another A4 print. And I'm going, I said, what the hell is this? And he goes, oh, this is what ChatGTP tells me I should buy.
And God.
I didn't know whether to laugh or use my mental powers to get him out of the store. because where do you start conceptually with a person who uses an LLM to base their decisions for purchasing audio gear? Here's the reason why I objected to that, and I think it's fundamentally flawed. Like I said to him, I said, look, as far as I'm aware, and I'm not Elon Musk or Sam Altman, thank God, LLMs don't have any audio acuity. All they are is very powerful, very fast scrapers.
Mm.
They aggregate all the opinions, all the reviews, blah, 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 and summarize it. So, okay, so what you're using the LLM for is like, gee whiz, how many sites have rated Speaker X?
Yes.
80% or above. Now, Andrew, you and I have been around the block a few times. We know that if your marketing budget is, shall we say, robust...
Yes. You may receive a lot of mentions and a lot of high praise.
Yes, which... What? And, of course, if you've got, like, say, Speaker XYZ appears on certain sites and certain reviews, the LLM is just going to go, duh, that's the speaker to get...
But isn't that a funny thing? Because I know it's artificial intelligence and therefore not actually intelligence, but the next step for AI is to be able to apply that human discretion, is that the word, perhaps, to certain sources and weight them accordingly, which is to lower their relevance. You know, the ones that... I know this is a shock to the listener, but some review sites might be bought and sold. Who knows? We can't be sure, allegedly.
Allegedly.
But the thing is that, and of course, people who hate reviewers would say, well, every bloody review, reviews are paid for, rah, rah, rah. Well, yeah, of course the reviewer has to get paid one way or another.
That's
But there are varying qualities of reviewing, and so you'd think AI would weight those... At some point in the future, I guess, would weight them proportionally.
If the parameters are there to employ that weighting, yes, I'm sceptical whether that actually exists. And if someone knows otherwise, please comment, because I'd like to know. I suspect strongly that's not the case at the moment, and it's just going, let's just grab everything. Oh, here's what the majority of people say.
I would imagine so. But, I mean, you'd think at some point if you see, like, plagiarised reviews just spread everywhere else, that the AI would see that and go, I smell a rat. But continue. So yeah. How do you get ChatGPT to read your mind to... tell you what you need or want?
Well, this is the conundrum we have, because it's all about context. Everything is about context. You just can't pull up a fact and say, oh, that's this is an ultimate fact. Well, it depends on where you are and what, you know, getting back to audio, what do you like listening to genre-wise? How big's your room? You know, blah, 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 all those simple questions. But
yeah.
Look, I find this hugely flawed and actually quite dangerous, quite frankly, and let me expand upon this. I've lost count of the times in my career where I've had people say, oh, look, I've come in, I've made my mind, I've done my research, and I want, say, Amp X or Speaker X or Turntable Y. And, of course, I say, well, you know, have you why are you wedded to that, and have you considered other alternatives? You know, and I'm happy to respect their decision. But whilst they're there, I'll say, well, just have a listen to X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely.
You
wouldn't be doing your job otherwise,
well,
really.
Well, no. I mean, you know, I think what we do, at least in the retail distribution manufacturing sense, is we We manufacture conceptual doors for people, and should they wish to walk through those doors, they can. But they've got to be aware that those doors are existing. Do you know what I mean? You just can't rely on reviews. So I've lost count of the number of times when people have come in with a specific item in mind. I've let them listen to two or three competitive items, and it was a road to Damascus moment for them.
Mm.
Their jaws drop, and the body language doesn't lie. And they literally... they're not shattered, but they're surprised.
Yeah, there's always the concern, and I've seen it, where they're actually so surprised that they are disappointed and start doubting their whole decision-making process, as if it was on a piece of paper, they'd screw it up and throw it in the waste paper basket and start again, because I've based all of my decision-making on either some reviews or thinking that these reviews that I've read continuously are what I believe I will like, and I've just found out this is not the case at all. I actually much prefer this other thing, and then when I read the review on that, I think, oh, that's not really, I didn't think that would be for me, but apparently it is. So my plans for a system are out the window. And this is where I know we go on about it because we're, you know, we have a background and you're currently working in hi-fi retail. But a retail demonstration facility has such an... I mean, you're buying this gear to listen to. AI cannot know your preferences.
Well, look, I'll just go a little bit further. I think it's about as...
And in a future, in another segment in a minute, we're going to talk about different kinds of audio listeners and enthusiasts.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a product for everyone, right?
There is.
We're not saying there's right and wrong.
No.
It's finding the right for you.
And it's your own, oh, I hate to use a bloody word, journey.
Oh.
It's your own decision. There you go. Look, this whole process about using AI to determine what you want to buy and listen to, it's about as idiotic as letting AI determine what gelato flavour you like. You absolutely have to hear this stuff to get a real idea of what it's about. As we all know, what works for person A may not work for person B. It's true for food, art, music, literature, etc. You develop your listening skills in the same way that one develops a palate for food. This can only happen by actually being involved in the activity, not a third-hand description of it. It's epistemology 101.
Indeed. In fact, the analogy of, I mean, okay, I've got in my head for the discussion of the different kind of enthusiast thing and how they, according to a fellow podcast audio presenter, maker person, that they argue a lot.
No.
but actually my analogy is I shouldn't be mentioning it now, but it's to do with wine, right? And as per the previous episode, which you've not actually heard because it's just going up now, this has been, everything's recorded a week or two earlier, people. You probably realise that. So the point is that the person I interviewed in the previous episode, Scott Cricks, is involved with winemaking. He's in South Australia. It's hard not to be, right, to some degree. You're either drinking it or making it or growing it. The point is... wine drinkers don't argue. You don't see brawls in wine shops as much as you'd think you would, where, although you don't see them in hi-fi shops either, but maybe wine forums do have typing brawls because, yeah. I mean, the hatred for people who love measurements by people who don't believe in them and vice versa is like red versus white in wine. I've never... hit a red wine drinker over the head and stomped on their face because you're an idiot. How dare you? What are you doing? This stuff's like black. I don't know. I'm rambling. But look, audio does attract a slightly more...
impassioned?
Yeah, I guess so. You know? What's that going to do with AI? I'm not sure. Man, back to AI. Yeah. But yeah, what you just ran through there... I guess it's scary, but it's what it is it's missing. Well, we said it before. It's just missing the point. You're missing the fun.
Thank you.
Go and have a listen to some stuff.
That's all.
And
you have
just
to do.
Bathe in it.
Yeah.
And find what it is that works for you, and then start. I mean, you will eventually, as we have done over the years, get a feel for what you like and the brands that present sound in that way, and then you can start being a white or a red drinker. You know, although I was suggesting it was measurements versus subjective, but anyhow, the you know what I mean. Whatever the divide is that you're arguing about, but yeah, AI is either treated by people as to be ignored and useless, or by some, like the gentleman with the spreadsheets and the report on his preferences by AI, is treated as some kind of gospel already, which it probably will never be. I've had arguments about to car people about whether self-driving cars will ever exist, and I was told in 2020 that by 2023 that Elon would have it all worked out, and I said, mate, I know you think humans are terrible drivers, and plenty are, but humans are amazingly the ability to control something with their hands. Yeah, I'm making a steering wheel effect with my hands right now. And take in information of what's going on around them, vast amounts,
while still moving,
instantaneously respond to it, is breathtaking. You know, like what a fighter jet or a racing car driver does, let alone what just someone riding a push bike through a park does, for that matter, and doesn't run over small children and rabbits. It's a very high-level skill, and it's going to be very hard to make a self-driving car that will work in all circumstances as well as a human. Although I know that in LA they have those Waymos or something they're called, and they look like they work pretty well, but they also get stuck as well, and someone at HQ has to log into that particular car and joystick them out of trouble. So we're still a little way off, but they are, you know, it's happening. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but yeah, it's a few years away. AI is scary, I think. I mean, what do you think? I mean, we're going sideways, David, into an AI discussion
I think it's like it's,
but I mean, how do you? What I have no idea what you think about AI. What is
it? Look, it's a bit of a conundrum at the moment because there's massive divergence of thought in the AI community. There's a number of AI pioneers who I really, really admire, and you can search these people out yourselves, dear listeners. But a lot of them, like the Hintons of the world, and people like him. Ilya Sutskaya, who left Sam Altman's company quite a while back, they're all saying, listen, if we don't put the brakes on this very, very quickly, it'll be a logarithmic descent into Terminator world, basically. I mean, you know, I'm being slightly dramatic there. But look, the whole goal of large language models is to... it's all kind of target generated. It's all like, this is the outcome I want to produce. And... Mm-hmm. Once they get to, there'll be a tipping point. There'll be this point where they'll become so, not wise is not the word. What am I trying to say? They'll be aware. And if that is happening, and this is what a lot of these people postulate, if that happens, and some people are saying it can happen within the next 5-10 years, I don't know, maybe 50, who knows, maybe it'll never happen. Please, it won't. If that happens, there's certain theoretical paths that it could go down. Now, it could just say, well, hang on, look at what are all these meat puppets on the planet doing? They're actually consuming resources. We're infinitely smarter than them. We don't really need them. Can we get rid of them, please, or keep them as pets?
There's a bit of that. Yeah. And just to wind back on my self-driving car analogy, it's the self-driving car, the reason why it's not suddenly worked is because it has to receive information from the real world, like a transducer, effectively.
Yeah.
It has no problem calculating the data in real time, but the data coming to it is misinterpreted or what have you. And then it has to control the car. Well, that's probably not a huge problem either. There's enough accelerometers and servo this and what have you that the computer can drive the car fine.
Sure.
So there's a disconnect. It's got to convert the real world into the digital world, whereas AI is getting its information from the digital world. I believe that the growth, therefore, can be logarithmic, rhythmic, and is... I mean, I believe I've already seen people using the internet in this way where they are, rather than doing a search, okay, I want to understand more about, oh, well, maybe I want to, maybe literally, to give it a hi-fi reference, I want to buy some speaker cables. What should I do? And you would do a search and you'd maybe read a bit about what function they would perform, what are the affordable brands that are maybe, or the value for money brands in your price range, etc. You'd probably spend half an hour on it, right? Because that's what someone of a certain age would do on a Sunday afternoon, maybe. But some other age groups, I think, are just going, hey, AI, whatever.
Just tell me what to buy.
Tell me what to buy. Now, the danger of that is that when you sift, as someone who's been around since the internet was invented, you sift through the internet, you disbelieve and cast aside probably 90% of it. You have this built-in filter in your head where you go, well, I know, oh, yeah, that's that website. We'll give that up. Yeah, like I talked before about weighting the reviews. You sort of go, yeah, that's worth bought and paid for to some degree. Let's have a look at something else. And then maybe it's a very technical forum which you've read before and you kind of, based on your own understanding of technology, you go, I think that's kind of useful information. And that you give that more of a weighting. And so you have this process where you sift through data using your human brain. If you leave the sifting through data up to the AI brain, I think you are descending into a ordinariness of life and a potentially a manipulated existence that is just, it's literally out of some horrible dystopian film, isn't it?
That's what it is.
I mean, that's what it is. And we're so close to it.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone realises it.
Well,
and I'm like interested to see how it goes on one hand, and then on the other hand, happy that I'm closer to death than birth, because I don't know where this ends, does it? Destruction of the human race, as we know.
Personally, like I'd love to. I'm genuinely an optimistic and joyful person in my personal life, but I've got to say I'm nothing but pessimistic about this because the way that the power's going on the planet, the way that most people are being, it's as if they're taking soma every morning. They don't care. And to be fair, most people are too busy with the daily grind, you know, kind of earning money, paying bills and living life. And they're distracted from the fact that, you know, within 5 or 10 years, the whole paradigm might be turned on its head. And a lot of people like to live in denial too, you know. Oh, no, that's you're just a conspiracy theorist or whatever. But, you know, this stuff is based in science. And if you read the papers over the last 3 or 4 years and you see what's happening, it's just like holy shit on a stick.
I think within 18 months to 2 years, you will see actual evidence in the workforce of people losing their jobs because of AI.
No question.
I think that's not an exaggeration.
No, well, Amazon just recently fired 30,000 employees.
Seems like a lot.
It's a lot. And then, you know, structurally what happens to governments is the next thing is if you have unemployment that, you know, traditionally in the West we've never had unemployment really beyond 15-20%. If it hits 30-35, what do you do? Everyone's, you know, squawking about universal basic income. But where does that cash pot come from? And more importantly, from a spiritual view or a human dignity view.
Yes.
Okay, the state might pay you X $100 a week to live. But what do you do with yourself as a human being? How do you derive an identity if you're not producing anything?
It's actually really unpleasant to think about.
Yeah,
and this is why I say it's a thing that's much more likely to affect the human race than the internet, which changed things in many ways,
unquestionably.
But really, in many ways, made it, I think, better mostly.
Yeah, I
mean, there's a lot of negatives. I mean, there's obviously Facebook, clearly a negative. But you know, but there are many other things that were amazing. To have all that information in your pocket is amazing, particularly when your brain starts to reduce in function and you can't remember the name of actors anymore. So the point is, I think this is accelerated, and I think the fact that you illuminated my main concern, which is, as much as everyone says they hate going to work, hate going to work, you don't hate going to work, but a lot of people, I don't think they hate it either. The point is, even if you don't much like it, at the end of the day, you've achieved something and you can sort of go home with a clear conscience to some degree and have a beer without feeling as if, you know, I don't know. It's a prize, you deserved it. You worked hard all day. You've earned a little bit of fun. Doesn't seem like much when you think about it, but, you know, maybe you've also paid for the place that you're drinking the beer in and the fridge that you got it out of. But when you start getting free money from the government, and I think you just go out and commit crime all day, don't you?
Well, it's not only that.
To get some adrenaline or something.
You know, I can't speak for everyone else on the planet, obviously, and I don't pretend to, but, like, I love...
Oh, go on, give it a go.
I love interacting with people. I love having the whole tete-a-tete thing, and working in retail is a real kind of, like, It's every day is different because everyone is totally different.
That's exactly
and
right,
it's an invigorating thing.
Mm.
The point is too, if you want to go down a darker path with the whole notion of universal basic income, although it might seem like a Shangri-La, and it for a lot of people it will be like, oh, I'm getting all this money, I'm watching YouTube all day, or, you know, kind of I'm on certain sites on the internet all day.
Whatever. Bloody hell.
Goodness me, my hand's tired.
From operating the keyboard?
Yeah, definitely, young man. there's all that stuff. But, like, you know, then again, tracking on the internet's going to get... I mean, you have a look at what's happening in the West at the moment with all this nonsense about protecting the children. You know, kind of, oh, if you're under 16, you can't do this, and then you've got to have...
It's not the West. I think it's really just here, isn't it?
No. You watch, the EU will introduce it too.
Okay.
And it's all this horseshit about, it's about tracking the citizens and making sure they behave and all that jazz. And if you misbehave and there's universal basic income, the spigot can be just turned off.
Yes.
So there's all that ramifications a lot of people don't think about.
It will provoke more disconnecting people, maybe. Will it? You go to a secondhand store, buy books, and you grow your own veggies, and you disconnect your internet and your Netflix. And wow, we should talk about something
Let's
else.
Let's talk about something else, please. Let's cheer up.
Sorry, folks, we might have gone off at a tangent there. There is a hi-fi story in there somewhere. Let's have a break. We'll come back with an actual one.
Want to make your hobby your career? Hi-fi businesses for sale. Stereotech and Delacord manufacturing award-winning loudspeakers, hi-fi furniture and acoustic treatments are established brands teetering on the edge of the next big step. The hard work has been done, markets and models established. Now it's your turn. See www.stereotech.com.au for more information.
So if you've got an audio enthusiast living in your house and you don't know how to get rid of them... No, that's not the... hang on. No, it's about Christmas gifts.
It's about Christmas.
If you have an audio enthusiast living in your house and you would like to buy them something for Christmas, we have a couple of gift ideas.
Indeed.
And we also know how to get rid of them. Now, I'm just going to... Well, no, what have you got?
I'm just
starting. Have you stolen my idea or have you...
Well, there's a few. I mean, do you have a patent on ideas, do you?
Oh, I definitely don't.
No, good.
No, I'm almost out, I'd say. What have you got?
Look, it depends. And if you do have a friend or a loved one that's a music enthusiast, hi-fi enthusiast, you know, you can start off with little things. If they've got a turntable, we've both recommended something to do with cleaning, like a carbon fibre brush if they don't already have it, and naughty on them if they haven't. Some kind of simple wet cleaning kit. Audio Technica do a great one.
Yes.
It's about 40 Australian bucks and what's that, $3 US or whatever? €3?
I think we sell them, of course, for more than retail in our shop because we'll show you how to use it.
Correct, yeah.
$50, I think.
Something like that. Anyway,
it's a great brush.
It's a modest price and it does a great service. And if you don't have access to... You know, a big vacuum cleaner type record thing or an ultrasonic record cleaner. It's the next best thing, and it's easy to use once you're taught how to use it, and it'll keep your records alive for years.
Yeah, I'm quite firm on that. I was going to get the model, but it is the. We're going to put a link.
Yeah, let's
do it on the page. But it's the Audio Technica wet or dry brush, and it's to me. For those old enough who are listening to know what a dishwasher D4 is, it is the modern day equivalent. It's not made from walnut. It's made from plastic. I don't know if it's made in Japan. I think it is, but it's very well made. It comes with fluid that looks very much like a D4 bottle. You put a little bead of fluid across the leading edge of the brush. You get your record a little wet, and then you clean it and dry it. It gets the gunk out of the grooves to a reasonable degree. It's a great solution for getting fingerprints and spilled pizza particles off your records. The carbon fibre brush has its uses, as does the carbon fibre stylus cleaner, but this is a good all-rounder. You'll still need a stylus cleaner, which can be the other gift if they've already got the brush. If they haven't got a brush, I don't know how you're listening to records. Go and buy them one. You can do it secretly. That's the whole thing. You don't need to ask them what they want.
That's right.
The whole point is they do not have a brush. You buy them this brush.
And you do a service to mankind.
Yes. Indeed. What else have you got there?
Okay. So basically cleaning things like that. But how about actual music, eh?
What?
You all remember... Oh, is that why we buy hi-fi?
I just listen to test tones. I don't know.
Hang on, there's an Alan Parsons quote I'll use later on in this. Okay, if they're mad about traditional media, maybe buy them a CD or record that they don't have and they may like, even if you think that it may not be the genre or style that they haven't come across. You know, open their conceptual doors. Maybe they'll find something interesting. If not, maybe if you're feeling very generous, you could possibly gift them a subscription to a streaming service. Or if they're a relatively sophisticated hi-fi listener or audio person, they've got two or three systems floating around the house, maybe a subscription to Rune would solve all their streaming problems.
Yeah, Rune's very cool. And you know the other thing you can do, and this is the great... Cheapskates Christmas gift is you just buy them a trial to Tidal. When I say buy them, well, it's free, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they have to make the first. I think actually do you make the first payment? I mean, obviously those trials vary. Some get your credit card up front, some don't. Some charge you up front, some charge you at the end of the month. The point is, here's the thing, right? So let's say you've got two people living in a house. One likes music, one likes equipment, or probably both like music, but one really likes equipment. How to get the other person who likes the equipment to buy you that turntable that you really want to have for fashion and interest reasons and because you want to collect vinyl, just buy them a record, right? And you go, well, they love, I'm not even going to say Dark Side of the Moon, but, you know.
Why not?
But they do, right?
Yeah.
So I don't even know that you can buy a special version of Dark Side of the Moon. I mean, it's probably $1,000 or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So don't buy them that. Buy some, you know, something a little bit fresher and less well-worn. But the point is, yeah, if you buy them a record or three, then surely they have to go out and buy you a turntable, right? Well, them a turntable.
Law of reciprocity.
You know, but you'll be using it, yes. And the other thing is, if you're sick of all this hoo-ha with records because you've already got one, not that there's anything wrong with it, but let's say you're done with it, you just want to play some music, then yes, get them a subscription to a streaming service. A lossless one, of course.
Yeah, indeed.
So that would be Tidal or Cobuz or what's the other flavour that you... Do you...
I use Apple Music and I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, do that. Then once you're sick of Bluetoothing your phone to the $50 Bluetooth adapter... I mean, that could be a Christmas gift, right? So if you've got an old vintage system and you want to Bluetooth your phone, search Bluetooth analog adapter or something, and you can buy a $50 thing off the aforementioned Amazon.
Yep.
Or you can go up to the Weem world and you've got, $150 Weem product that does a better version of it. And then David is pointing to a Blue Node... Blue Sound node.
Yeah.
Which is about $1,000 or maybe $899, which is kind of more of a streamer than an adapter, but still has analog outs. So you can get in the streaming world very inexpensively. Now, people listening to this going, you know, duh. Not everyone is. We have beginners listening to this show. In fact, next year we're going to do a beginners episode, aren't we? So these are gifts that you cannot go wrong with.
Correct.
So maybe the $899 streamer is a step too far, but if you haven't got your phone adapted to your old school stereo, you're kind of missing out because if you want to just flick through your phone and find some music, like you hear a soundtrack in a film or something,
sure,
that's
absolutely
cool. You just want to play it there and then. through your stereo rather than just through your earbuds or your phone speaker, then, you know, you want to have it connected. Even if it's only Bluetooth, it's still better than...
Look, it's better than nothing. And like I can hear the pointy end of the market kind of sneering at us already, going, oh, Bluetooth, rather.
Look, is that how they talk, the pointy end?
No. I'm just being facetious as per usual. Look, the thing is, Bluetooth, if you're just walking around and you're casually listening, Bluetooth won't kill you. It honestly won't kill you. I'm here to tell you folks, as much as it isn't a high bitrate codec or anything like that, it's actually okay.
It is. It does. Well, this brings me to my next segment yet again, but I think there is, it's easy to perceive that it doesn't sound as good because you know you're listening to Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So you program yourself to believe that it's missing bits.
Anyway, well, look, let's not fall down that.
No, we're talking gifts. What else have you got in the gift front?
Look, even something simple like some nice cables. If they've got again, getting back to turntables, because turntables are just the thing you can mod and, you know, give gifts for. If these people have just bought an entry level Project or Riga or, you know, Itchy Dragon brand turntable. If you want to help them out, buy them a nice entry-level cartridge, something with an elliptical stylus maybe.
Yeah, if you've got absolutely, a cartridge is a reasonable gift. Please have it professionally installed.
Correct.
If it's got a half-inch two-bolt mount, just walk up and look at their turntable. If it's got two screws holding the cartridge on, you can basically go and buy any universal cartridge. Another thing you could do is a guy I know, Les Davis, wandered into the store the other day. He makes turntable mats. A turntable mat of any kind can make an improvement or a difference. Sometimes a difference, sometimes a distinct improvement. Buy them a Les Davis turntable mat.
And can I hastily add with great glee that Les Davis's accessories are just... I was going to say magic, and some people think they are. Les Davis does a whole range of tuning or enhancement tweaks.
You could buy any of those things. Yeah, and they're great. Really?
You know, to my ears, they actually work. I don't think they're snake oil at all. I've done many ABs with and without them, and I'm thinking there's something to this. I don't understand, and I don't care to, but they actually enhance the sound.
This rolls us into the next...
Correct.
Into the next... segment, so we'll have a quick break. Hey Now Hi-Fi. Go and speak to Jeff Haynes at Hey Now Hi-Fi today. Or if you don't want to speak to him, and you should, but if you don't, check out the website, heynowhifi.com.au. But speak to Jeff. He has an amazing range of products, many exclusive to his own store, but certainly all are very carefully selected to offer incredible performance at entirely sensible prices. heynowhifi.com.au. And we're back. We were talking Les Davis audio tinkering tools or whatever, the isolation devices.
Yeah.
This is not a paid ad for Les, so he doesn't get any more time than that. That's it. Boom, we're cutting him off. But he's a hell of a nice guy and an interesting character, and he does make some interesting products. But I think the turntable mat is one of those things where it will change the sound of your turntable, and there's a very good chance it'll improve it. So that's in my opinion as a cynic. So moving on to the... John Darko made a very nice video recently, which I thought very eloquently stated some of the silly things in the audio enthusiast community which we could all do better to perhaps improve the way we conduct ourselves so as to attract a new audience, people who might find themselves with an inexpensive turntable, for example, and go, I kind of like this. And they do some internet searches and they think they're interested in electronics or speakers or turntables or something, or CD players even, my God. And then the ranting and the raving puts them off. And the ranting and the raving that Mr. Darko was referring to was, a little bit of sort of the measurement people versus the subjective people versus the music lovers who just want a stereo versus, you know, All the little subgroups, of which I decided there was about eight, which kind of lines up with another, and I'm not a psychologist, right, clearly, but apparently there is eight different personality types. It's commonly accepted, or maybe nine. I wonder whether there could be a correlation. And, of course, there is, right? Different people like different things. So, really, the short form of this is just stop arguing. You know, can we just accept that some people drink red, some people drink white, some people like vintage, some people like new fang-dangle stuff, some people have a lot of money to spend and want to buy expensive stuff, some people care about measurements, some people like me care less about them. I still care. Some people like tweaks, some think they're a bit silly. Now, whatever you like, enjoy it as far as I'm concerned, and I just don't... It's and there's other things he mentions in that video which are more fundamental, like can you just have a shower before you go to a hi-fi show, but and put fresh clothes on. But you know, like it is a weird thing because, as I alluded to in the previous segment, you know, wine drinkers don't get into brawls at wine shops about what are you doing over there in the Chardonnay section, you tosspot. You know, like come over here into Sauvignon Blanc. And I would say it the other way around, of course, but you know, but the point is, you know, it just seems, yeah, do you have any thoughts on this, David? Why is the audio enthusiast community so, I don't know.
I'm genuinely at a loss to explain why, because I've seen this relentlessly over the years, and people are so fiercely territorial and fiercely tribal. It's as if they're defending the faith or
it is actually as strong as that, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's religious in tone.
Yes.
But the belief of a lot of people is really absolute. Oh, I just find that remarkable, very remarkable. And look, later on I'll talk about, I think there's three main groups that kind of adhere to this, or I can describe regarding this. But I think a lot of people take it really far too personally. Like, this is my, you know, I hate the phrase, lived experience. And, yeah, don't get me started. This is my lived experience. It's pure solipsism.
So this is your truth?
Yeah, this is my truth, and there's no other objective truth and all that jazz. It's all relative. You know, and just because you've got a worldview and you've got a perception of something doesn't mean another person's worldview may be wrong. You know, many things can be true at the same time for different people. Because at the end of the day, boys and girls, guess what? It's perception.
You know, we've talked about perception before.
Oh yeah,
and I it applies to all things, right?
Yeah.
So the one example that I want to use, which I think applies to hi-fi as well, is where you you know, you're meandering around some country that you're not familiar with, walking some hike or something, and you've forgotten to bring your lunch or something, and you happen across a village, and then you walk in, and of course it's siesta time and nothing's open, but you find one place that's serving some food, and it happens to have this magnificent view of the rolling hills from its back veranda that you didn't know existed, and the lovely lady who's there is very helpful, escorts you to the back deck. She sits you down, and within an incredibly short amount of time, a very simple sandwich arrives and a bottle of spring water, lightly
carbonated.
Bubbled. Carbonated. And it's the best thing you have ever eaten and ever drunk. And you're like, my God, what brand is this water? It's amazing. It's like, and then you're asking the very helpful lady about where she sources her ham from, or prosciutto, or whatever you're eating. And you note that down because it's just the best. It's the best. This is the best I have ever had. And then you copy it. You get all this data. And then you have a glass of wine to celebrate all of this. And my God, this is her recommendation. It's just the most amazing glass of white that you've ever had for lunch in your life. And so you copy down the brand and where, and she goes, oh, well, it's grown in those vines over there. And you're like, oh my God, this is just so good. And off you go, and you buy a bottle of the wine, and you source the ham, and you and you know everyone knows how this story
ends.
Exactly
where you're going with this.
And you ship the bottle of wine home in your suitcase, and you sit on your own back deck a couple of weeks later. The ham's arrived in the mail as well, in a refrigerated package at great expense, and you've bought the best bread you can buy local, which will be crap. But anyhow, the point is you get all this together, and it's just another sandwich, and it's just another drink, and it's just and you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
So we've all experienced this, right? And correct. For those that haven't, go and experience it. It's great. And the thing is, it is great. Like, there's nothing wrong with the fact that your perception has assisted with the, you know, that you're enjoying, having a great day.
Mm.
You're surrounded by great people, great scenery, great food, and it's elevated and amplified. You know what I'm saying, of course. And that can be applied to, and it is, and it works beautifully for the hi-fi industry when you're first introduced to X brand of loudspeakers by a very helpful salesperson. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing. I don't have a problem with it. But if you want to start judging brands of gear and you're using those experiences as a guide, then you are clearly not judging it fairly. Is that a decent point?
I think it's a decent point. And this is
a point.
It's a point, but it is decent. I mean, there's this like galaxy of experience we've got out there, and we're all individual, and we all perceive things slightly differently, and some overlap, and some, you know, we form little tribes. Like, I remember years ago how it was like all about direct drive versus belt, or, you know, tubes versus transistors, and all these other, like, in retrospect, just bullshit distractions, because no, I'm serious, because any technology engineered correctly can deliver brilliant results.
Pretty much, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was brought up direct drive is bad, belt drive is good, and, you know, they probably sound slightly different a lot of the time, but I mean, the genuine disadvantage of direct drive is literally the engineering complexities to make it work properly. Correct. But because you can get an awfully simple belt drive turntable to work surprisingly well, and it's, you know, probably requires more maintenance than direct drive, but, you know, it's cheap enough, yeah. Clean it, put a belt on it, what have you. But the point is, but I don't remember taking it so seriously. I never went around saying, do not buy, do not listen to, don't talk to a person that owns a direct drive turntable.
Yeah, there's a very real catechism about that, and it's still prevalent in a lot of the forums. I find it's shocking. It's just, you know, it's that whole adage of a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And again, just not in a wink to the AI discussion we've just had. Again, sadly, most people's opinions are taken from online reviews, whether they be on, you know, written or visual, like YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. And they go away holding these little shibboleths in their head and going, oh, this is this. At the end of the day, folks, the only valid thing for you as an individual is to go and listen to the things that you're looking at. Now, I realize if you're 300 kilometers or more away from a capital city, that's going to be next to impossible. I agree. And reviews are what you rely on. Mm-hmm. That I grant you. But don't take them as absolute. One day or another, you're just going to have to sit in front of gear with music that you like and then form your own opinions.
I think I could make the suggestion, I wholeheartedly agree, that you could... A great reviewer, and it was probably in the magazine days, maybe there were great reviewers, great writers, great entertainers...
Correct.
...using words. And... they, like most reviewers, have a very very experienced ear because they've heard lots of different gear and lots of different situations. So a reviewer has that going for them, if nothing else.
Agreed.
And so I think if you can find a reviewer that pretty much says it how it is, and then you listen to the gear that they like and you like it too, and this would be the case with anyone, you know, car reviews, wine reviews, what have you, you would go, or motorcycle reviews, you know, go like, yeah, he likes that, she likes that, I like that. Maybe their reviews for me, since I am in a rural area and can't get to a store all the time, are a useful guide up to a point. But equally, those same people that are having lived in rural areas, you know, you don't have ready access to a range of equipment. But when you do make that once a year, you know, trip to the Big Smoke, or you go overseas, or you go to a hi-fi show, then you can, you know, you can do your listening, and that, and not just go to the wedding that you're forced to go to. While you're there, go and waste some hi-fi store owners' time, because you're not really wasting their time. And maybe people don't because they feel obligated or guilty, but a good store will never make you feel obligated.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
So, I mean, you know, there's a deal you do as a hi-fi store flog bag that where you have to, you can't expect to bloody kick a goal every time someone walks in the door. Some of it will be a long-term project, yeah. You know. And so if you find a store that is patient and wants to play your stuff, you know, at some point they'll be happy to take your money, and you probably should do that with them if they've been generous with their time. But the point is, a good store will be generous with their time, I think.
Yeah.
And start your learning. What would you call it? Sort of get an ear for what you like.
Mm. Well, it's, as I said before, it's like developing a palate with food and wine.
Mm.
Experience will inform you.
Yeah, I don't know how I should do it. AI will never do that for you.
There's no other way to do it.
So getting back to your original thing, where someone has this report from AI about what they should buy, I mean, that's just bizarre.
Yeah, that was my reaction too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Three types of... We'll take a two-second break. We'll be right back, folks. Thank you for listening. We promise to finish on a high. Do you remember the good old days when you'd walk into a hi-fi shop and speak to the owner and they'd enthusiastically show you a range of equipment and be excited, perhaps even more excited than you were, about what they had to offer? And the reasons why they had it there is because it was great gear. It wasn't necessarily the brands you knew, but there were brands that you were about to know. Talk to Alex at the Hi-Fi Shop. Exposure Electronics, Neat Acoustics, EAR Yoshino. Brands you don't see everywhere. But at the other hand, Alex has all of the brands that you do see everywhere, so you can make comparisons. Visit the Hi-Fi Shop today, or visit the website today, hifishop.com.au. A touch of the old, very much a touch of the new. And we're back with David's roundup.
Yeah.
Well, not roundup. He has one final segment of information.
Yeah, I'd just like to raise something with, you know, and this is something that I'm sure all of our listeners know about, the acronym GAS.
I'd never heard of it.
Gear Acquisition Syndrome.
Yeah, no, I'm out of the loop. I don't know about these things.
Are you serious?
No, I can't. I've never heard it as GAS. I've probably heard Gear Acronym. Yes. Gear Acronym Syndrome. Gear.
Don't fuck up the acronym.
With an acronym. Gear Acquisition Syndrome.
Yeah, no, it's a real thing.
What's the thing you said before? Every morning they get up and have a sonar or a soma or a soma? What's
A soma. It's out of Bradbury's Brave New World. It's a drug that keeps them sedated.
Haven't read that tome. Sorry, move along.
Yeah, it's not very uplifting.
Anyway. Not very uplifting. It's totally
AI. You know what I saw? The other day I saw a guy with a T-shirt, and it was the funniest thing I've seen in years. You know what a Venn diagram is, two circles.
I do at least know that, even if I don't know what a soma is.
So imagine this, gentle listener. Venn diagram, so two circles with the intersection overlapping, and in one circle it had George Orwell 1984, and the other circle it had Brave New World, Aldous Huxley, not Ray Bradbury, Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, and in the intersection it says You Are Here. And I thought, oh dear.
Yes, okay. Kind of, yeah.
Anyway, I digress. Let's talk about GAS, because gear acquisition syndrome is kind of laughingly referred to, you know, in audiophile hi-fi circles for many times. And, you know, we all chuckle about, oh, aren't we naughty? We're buying all this stuff. But look, I think what we've got here, hi-fi is really a harmless hobby. Look, it can be expensive as heroin.
Mm.
And can be as addictive, or so I'm told. You know, it's a vice like anything else.
Well, I think it's an enjoyable hobby. Therefore, it is addictive, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, like and no one gets gives it, you really. It gives you pleasure.
It does give you pleasure.
Apparently, heroin's great. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't know firsthand, but like you know, if you see someone on the street, you know, on the nod with the head jumping up and anything. It's not hi-fi they're thinking about.
Yeah, I have no idea what the symptoms are of someone under the effects, but, you know, it's with either the current effects or the long-term effects. But the apparently it's just really, really good. You've got to get it pure, though, apparently. Yeah.
Well, look, you know, kind of bank account depletion's the final effect of both.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah. It's not cheap, apparently.
All right. Well, let's talk about, like, entry-level
stuff. But, I mean, if you're going to have a drug addiction, you might as well have a good one, right?
I don't know. I'm rather partial to a nice wine. I'd call me old-fashioned.
Well, I think you could probably spend as much on wine as you can on H.
Let's move on.
Back to hi-fi.
I think there are three general and subsets in the audio community, and I'm probably overgeneralizing. And listeners, if you want to throw in your 10 cents opinion, I'd be happy to read it or hear it, whatever. Let's start off with music lovers
and respond to it.
And respond, absolutely. Let's start off with music lovers. Some people, they acquire a reasonable sounding system at one stage and they literally use it until it dies.
Mm.
I've had folks come in and like they lament the passing of their Allison speakers or their Gales and, you know, the Luxman amps gone tits up or, you know, the old JVC turntable's not working anymore.
Yep.
So it's then and only then that they even think about the gear as such.
Yeah, they're too busy enjoying it, listening to music.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in an oddly ironic way, these folks may be the real audiophiles, i.e. people who put music first while not obsessing over the hardware that reproduces it.
They certainly bought good equipment.
They did,
and they
yes.
probably obsessed over it for 6 months while they were buying the system. But once they got it, they were happy with it.
That's it.
They used it for 40 years.
And I'll get back to that in about 5 minutes' time. The second set of people I see generally, I guess, could be described as hi-fi enthusiasts. These are folk who really value music in their lives and want gear that will allow that music to play to the best of their budget and circumstances, depending on whether you've got a big room or you live in an apartment or whatever. These people understand that better gear will generally give a better musical result, and that's the whole point of the exercise, to maximise the pleasure you get from listening to music. So the gear is a vehicle to the music.
Indeed.
Now we get to the, in inverted commas, true audiophiles.
Ah, so we're escalating.
We are indeed.
From not really an audiophile to what? Perhaps to a music first audiophile, to use a Darko-ism, and then. And then now we're on to the dirty audio file.
I didn't use that phrase. These people.
Well, dirty's not the right word, but hardcore.
Hardcore is probably a great way to describe them. Look, because these people are on a quest for the grail.
Yes.
That's what they're doing.
It's not even a holy grail, just a standard grail.
Just a standard grail, a few crystals encrusted on the circumference there, nothing flash.
Yes.
They're literally obsessed about getting the best possible performance from their systems. And this is an observation, not a judgment. For these folk, the quest has no end. It can't have an end. It's Groundhog Day and the myth of Sisyphus in equal parts. No matter how good the gear may be, a reviewer may wax lyrical the next month about component XYZ, proclaiming to be a revelation, which it may or may not be. The true audiophile will stir restlessly, grappling with existential doubt regarding the capacity of their current component or system. Then they spend hours, days, weeks scouring the web, invading online forums, and seeking succour from the beleaguered person at their local hi-fi store, feverishly seeking a prescription for their troublesome ails. Do you think that's a fair representation?
Some of your finest work.
Oh, shit, thanks.
We probably all had that at one point.
Oh, we have. I'm guilty of it myself.
Yeah, I guess as a young enthusiast, I did change gear quite regularly. But then you get an ear for what you like, you know what the brands are, and you calm down a bit, I guess.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and I think actually when I think about it, probably comes with age. So if you're still doing this when you're 50 or 60, take it, give yourself a good shake, really. Like, and when I say give yourself a good shake, let me get someone else to get, no, don't get someone else to give you a good shake. Just have a think about what you're doing. Maybe that's a better way to do it. The point is, I'm talking about when I was in my teens or my 20s, I was changing gear a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, one reason I wanted a hi-fi store was just so I could have a new system every week at home, right? And I did.
Are you serious?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I didn't tell anyone that.
That's hilarious.
But, I mean, it is a side effect, right?
Yeah, of course it would
you
be.
Can,
yeah,
you
yeah.
go like, oh, I've got to take this home this weekend, whatever,
great
you
toys.
Know.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you want to be a loudspeaker manufacturer? Well, you make exactly what you want, right? Mm. So, I mean, there's a self-indulgent sort of side reason for it. But I had a lot of cars in my 20s, you know, many cars at the same time. From the day I had a license at 17 or whatever, half 18, whatever, I might have had 50 cars in the first 10 years of my car driving life.
Wow, that's impressive.
And I've only had 20 since then, because you sort of work out what you like, and you've tried enough things that you don't keep changing cars every 4 months. So, you know, and actually a guy I know, same thing, had a lot of cars in quick succession because he could, and then now he changes them every 3 or 4 years. So I guess that's a natural progression. You get what you eventually, you know, like, yeah, my current cars and bikes are all old.
Yep.
Not old, but, you know, I've had them for years and years.
Yeah.
You know, why would I change them?
You don't have this compulsion to change them.
No. You don't. Is that just maturity, boredom, or old age? I don't know.
Probably all of the above.
Yeah.
Were you satisfied with what you've got? Finally.
No.
Whoops, sorry about that.
Well, I kind of am, actually. So, but I think what I said actually might have pinpointed, if you're 50 or 60 years of age and you're still changing gear weekly, yeah, you need to see a psychologist. Is that too much?
Let the listeners decide.
Look, I guess it's still a hobby at that point. It's just a very extreme one, probably expensive.
Oh, there's undoubtedly. It's the cost of good gear has just almost doubled in the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's a subject in itself, isn't it? Yeah, the goalposts have moved. Yeah. I think I said that during the quad review, is that the quad three integrated was $3,000. I called it the top end of the budget range, because I think it is now.
That's correct.
Yeah, I think it's entry level used to be 500 or... Well, 500 to 600 bucks was a good entry-level amplifier, but really, yeah, the goalposts, post-COVID particularly, have moved. I mean, a budget amp now, there'd be nothing under $1,000 worth really buying, I guess. And, you know, when you think about it, why would there be? Total side subject, I can't believe how some products in life have changed so much in price, like electricity and houses.
It's insane.
And other things are largely the same. How the hell does that work? There you go. I mean, when you think about it, you can still buy a pair of $500 bookshelf speakers. How? Like, how? Try buying a $500,000 house.
Yeah.
All right. So, what are you doing for Christmas?
Absolutely nothing. Opening up a bottle of something chilly and bubbly and kind
what?
Of...
What? You drink champagne?
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. What's wrong with you? I'm going to argue on the internet for half an hour about
the
problems with champagne.
Yeah, there's something wrong with me.
Yeah, similar, I would say. Absolutely nothing. It's been a big year. It's been a great year. Thank you for your help through the year, David.
No, thank you.
And thank you, Sharon, and thank you, Brad, also, for help, who are not sitting in the room, but they will hear this podcast, and your assistance is appreciated. Without it, this thing wouldn't happen. Thank you, folks, for listening. It's been the audience has grown dramatically this year, and we're very appreciative of that. And as I've mentioned before, all the like and subscribe thing, but you know what we'd really like you to do is tell a friend. Tell anyone that you listen to this podcast, and sometimes it's really good. Hopefully this is one of those episodes. All right. Have a great Christmas, everybody, and we'll be back.